If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
The 2017 draft, our centennial draft, is awarded to the city of Chicago, the Blackhawks, and the United Center.
This is cool. It's a big, big day for our franchise, big day for our fans. It's always fun to bring these jewel events to Chicago. We know the impact that they have on our fan base. We want this event to be entertaining. We want this to be innovative, and we want it to be memorable.
People from Canada to the Czech Republic, people from Finland to France, from Sweden to Switzerland, players and their families and fans from around the world will be coming to the city of Chicago. And what better place to be than the most American of American cities, but the city of Chicago.
My draft day, like everybody's draft day, is a special one. I guess in a lot of ways you don't know what's going to happen for myself. I had a few ideas of which teams like me and which teams are going to pick me. Even I guess there's only a couple picks before I was able to go, but it still felt like a lifetime. I was pretty nervous when I finally heard my name call. I think that's when you really realize in some ways your dream has come true. You're there, you're putting the jersey on, and that's where the new chapter, the story of your hockey career is really beginning.
Welcome inside the United Center and welcome inside the draft floor, the 2017 NHL Entry Draft. We are live here at the United Center right now, along with Blackhawks analyst Troy Murray. I'm Judd Surratt. We're here for the Blackhawks Draft Show. If you want to join us, the best way to do it is via Twitter, at Judd, J-U-D-D underscore Surratt, S-I-R-O-T-T. Or at Muzz, M-U-Z-Z 19 via Twitter. But this is a spectacle here.
I've been very impressed. I have never been to a draft before, not even when I was drafted, because they really didn't have this kind of fanfare back in 1980. But it's been very impressive. Obviously, the city has embraced it. We've got a great turnout here again today. Yesterday was a packed house to see the first round. It's very exciting to see how the inner workings happen in the days of the draft and how they approach, you know, the opportunity to put some of these young men into your organization. And I found it very fascinating day one about everything that was going on.
The reaction yesterday when Jim Cornelissen was doing the national anthem, when guys like Stan Bowman or John McDonough were announced at the podium, and to see this place packed last night in late June for the NHL entry draft, I think speaks volumes to what has happened in the city here over the last decade.
The city is hockey crazy, and even though that the Blackhawks have had some poor performances in the playoffs the last couple seasons, not making it past the first round, there's still a ton of excitement of what, you know, could happen next year. Nobody wants the offseason to be as long as it has been the last couple years, but everybody's excited to see what happens come September when training camp, and then when October rolls around, the season starts again. You know, it's just very impressive. They had a great fan festival outside yesterday. It was a beautiful day. You had the neon trees out there performing on the grandstand, the bandstand that they had out there, and there was a ton of people just out enjoying the atmosphere around the building, not even inside the draft.
The earth was shaking early yesterday morning. You and I had a chance when we were on the phone, and some of the moves were coming down while we were in the midst of the conversation. We'll get to that here in a second, because there's certainly a lot to talk about, whether it's the transactions that have taken place, some of the moves that have been made on the coaching staff. Marian Hossa unable to play in the upcoming season. But let's first talk about what this day is about for the players and also for the organizations, what we're watching right in front of us here today with the entry draft.
Well, there's a lot of young men here who have high aspirations of playing in the National Hockey League, and the reality of it is not a lot of them in the draft are ever going to play long NHL careers, but it's that possibility, it's that anticipation of, you know, being here at the United Center and having your name called out. it's an exciting moment for all these guys, the players, the families. We're all here yesterday, the first-round picks. The top picks were certainly in attendance here, you know, waiting for their name to be called. There was some disappointment. There were some players that were omitted in the first round that thought they might have been in the first round. Undoubtedly, they're going to, you know, end up being in the second round or very shortly. But at the same time, it's nerve-wracking for the players who come here and are getting, you know, an opportunity to maybe get drafted into an organization. You might have your eye on one. You might have an agent that's saying that these guys are very interested. And every time you see that team come up to the podium to make an announcement of who they're going to draft and you don't get your name called, there's disappointment there, and then you just don't know what's going to happen. So it's a very tense few days for the players coming into this type of an event. It's important for the organizations to have all their ducks in a row, if you want to put it that way, because it's important. You don't want to miss that opportunity, and that's why the scouting in today's world of hockey is so important, and it's worldwide. It's just not North America, Canada, United States, where it used to be Canada heavy, the major junior leagues. Now it's all over the world. The Blackhawks have scouts in Finland and Russia and China. I mean, everybody's got those scouts in all corners of the world looking for that diamond in the rough that they might be able to find. And then you look at a guy like an Andrew Shaw who kind of goes through the draft 1 year. And, you know, now he gets picked in a later round and he becomes a big part of the Blackhawks organization. Those are the type of players that you're looking for in the later rounds, those guys that you think that there's something inside them that drives them, that makes them different than the rest of the players. You can kind of look at the top-end players, and it's pretty easy to figure out a guy like Patrick Kane is going to be a great player, or Connor McDavid a couple of years ago. Those are no-brainers. Where it really comes into effect, you and I, Judd, could pick Connor McDavid. We're not that smart, but you and I could pick Connor McDavid. We could pick Patrick Kane. The Blackhawks actually, in a really deep draft, got Jonathan Toews the year prior to Patrick Kane at number 3.
Yep.
So, you know, you have to look at everything that happens and what player is available early on. The best player that suits the needs of your organization is usually drafted by that team. But as you get into these rounds today, the second rounds, that's when you really have to trust the scouts. You really have to use the knowledge of the connections within your organization to find that guy that is going to fit. If you're a team that's looking for a defenseman, then you got to find that right-handed defenseman, left-handed defenseman, a puck-moving defenseman, a skilled big guy, or however the makeup is. So there's a lot of things that go into day two of the draft. And for the organizations, it's really important to stockpile with prospects that someday may play in the NHL.
And now it's so different than when you were playing, and maybe even a decade or two ago in the National Hockey League. In talking to the general manager, Stan Bowman, a couple of weeks ago, he said if you really want to make substantial change or have a substantial impact on your team, it's not through free agency. It's not through the trade market. It has to be at the draft.
That's the life, the bloodline of every organization. You have to have the opportunity to draft well and take advantage of your system and develop your players. Once you get those players in your system, then, you know, whether they go back to juniors right off the bat, because a lot of these players won't step into the NHL. They'll go back to their respective junior players wherever they may fit in. But at the same time, you have to put your organization in a position of strength. You hire a coach down in the minors to develop those players the way that you want to develop them. You want to put, you know, your organization, and most players have to go through the minor league system. It's very seldom that a Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews never goes to the minor. You look at the Blackhawks now, you know, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Jalmerson, who was just traded away, all those guys, core pieces of the group, Patrick Sharp, who was here before, those guys all played significant time in the minors because it's not easy to make that jump. So you have to get the right chemistry. You have to make sure that you pick the right type of people that you're looking for. And it's important. It goes so much deeper than it ever did in my day. They have the NHL Combine that tests the strength and the endurance of these young athletes. And, you know, you can really kind of pick out the difference between the guys who have committed themselves to an off-season training program, even at a younger age. And you like those players because they're dedicated. They want to be better. Some of the players don't come in and they just think that they can come in and just play hockey, and they've always been great players at different levels. But that doesn't mean that once you get against the world's best, that you're going to be able to make it and succeed. So you're looking for little things. They have team psychologists or mental skills coaches that talk to these players and try and dig deep into the minds of kind of how they're wired and how they're going to produce and how, you know, what do they want? Where's their drive? And I think that all those things are so important within an organization now. And you don't want to leave anything unturned, because that possibility of finding that type of player that can make the difference between whether you win a championship or not, because you have the depth that you've developed within your organization, is key to the success of every franchise in the National Hockey League.
Friday morning, there was a flurry of activity from the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll see if we can start to dive into some of that. Some monumental trades. Let's begin with Nicholas Hjalmarsson. So the Blackhawks make an acquisition. They pick up a young defenseman in Connor Murphy, send Nicholas Hjalmarsson to the Arizona Coyotes. What was some of your thoughts as you started to see that deal come down?
Well, I think it was a shock to a lot of people, and back-to-back with Panarin, which we'll touch on, yes, obviously in a minute here. But, you know, Nicholas Hjalmarsson has been a huge piece of this core group of guys. And when you lose 2 years in a row, and you kind of look at the St. Louis series that you lost in Game 7 in St. Louis, where Troy Brouwer scored with 5 minutes to go in the game. It was a great series. It was back and forth. It was that close. You kind of accept that you're not going to win every year, and the Blackhawks played hard. St. Louis had a really good team, and they made a nice run. This year, the way that the Blackhawks lost was disturbing, and I think that when that happens, you really have to reassess what's going on within your organization. Is that core group being committed to winning another championship? Is there complacency that comes into the picture? You've also got to take, you know, into consideration as they move a little bit past, you know, their prime years. And I'm not saying that those guys were, but you have to factor all that into. You have to look at the coaching staff that was adjusted. Mike Kitchen was let go. And not necessarily, it's not Nicholas Hjalmarsson's fault, it's not Panarin's fault, it's not Mike Kitchen's fault, but you have to have change. And I think change at certain points is good, and if you look at the deal with Nicholas Hjalmarsson, you pick up a player who's 6 years younger, he's got a cap-friendly five-year deal, he's a really good young player, he was a big piece of the Arizona Coyotes. This wasn't just a deal to dump salary or get rid of a player. This was a hockey deal in a lot of sense, that you're getting younger, you're getting a little bit size, you're getting a different type of player in Connor Murphy than you had in Nicholas Hjalmarsson. But make no bones about it, you don't win three Stanley Cups without the guy, the presence of a Nicholas Hjalmarsson. It was so important for him to be, you know, involved in those. But there's a time and a place where you have to make adjustments. And if you sit another year without making changes, and Stan Bowman at the end of the year said, you know, there will be changes. Well, significant changes, maybe more changes than people would realize or thought would happen, have already happened with the Blackhawks. And I don't think in some ways it's over. But you look at the position that the Blackhawks are in as far as their salary cap structure. And it makes sense that you pick up a guy like Connor Murphy. You've got cost certainty for five more years in the deal that is coming back to the Blackhawks. You pick up another young piece in that deal as well. So there's a lot of things that on the inside are important to the success of the future of the franchise. On the outside, you look at and you go, why did they trade Nicholas Hjalmarsson? You know, you got to dig a little bit deeper. You got to uncover some of the layers of what's involved in that. Nobody wants to see Nicholas Hjalmarsson. He was one of the nicest guys that we've ever dealt with in the room. You know, Trevor Van Riemsdyk was another player. Great guys. You just love to work with them. Very friendly to the media. Great people. But that, unfortunately, is the nasty side of the business. And those are tough decisions for an organization to make. They're tough decisions for Stan Bowman to make as a coaching staff. Sometimes you look at it and you go, there's a lot of more involved than just, you know, what you're seeing kind of up front. And that's the way you have to look at it with Nicholas Hjalmarsson. There's a lot of underlying things that are going on there. They didn't want to get rid of Nicholas Hjalmarsson,
no.
But they wanted to get younger. They wanted to make some changes because the core group has lost 2 years in a row in the first round. They're not getting younger. That core group of guys. So you have to make adjustments, and I hope the fans, I think that, you know, when they see a guy like Connor Murphy to come in here, you have to have an open mind and accept him for who he is. He's not Nicholas Hjalmarsson. You get that. But at the same time, you embrace him coming in. And I think it's important for the fans to understand that, you know, you're going to be a little bit upset because Hjalmarsson is one of those guys that you cheer for. He's been with the Blackhawks for, you know, his whole career. But you wish him the best, and he's going to be a big part of Arizona and reworking that young team into a successful franchise. But you welcome the new blood that's coming in.
And for Connor Murphy, as we talk about the new blood that comes into the organization, the other kid that comes over from Arizona is a kid named Laurent Dauphin, a wiry centerman who was a high second-round pick. We can talk a little bit more about him later, but with Connor Murphy, Blackhawk fans, and you and I have had a chance to talk to him a lot here over the last decade, they have wanted that punishing, nasty, physical defenseman. You got that type of a guy in Connor Murphy. He can play that style, and he's a young player. I think sometimes in talking to some of the Arizona people, he was guilty, and this is different because he's playing on a team that was struggling to try and make its way to the playoffs. And he was guilty sometimes of trying to do too much. It's a completely different system here. The expectations will certainly be different here. And because of that, and as you well know, it takes defensemen a little bit longer. I think you're going to see some growth in Connor Murphy's game. But for Blackhawk fans who love that edgy style and wanted to see more of that with the team, they got that type of player on the back end.
That's why I think there's a lot of reason to be excited. If there was one thing that everybody kind of took out of that series with the Nashville Predators is the Blackhawks didn't have enough grit and size to compete against a more tenacious Nashville Predator team. The Nashville Predator team is only going to get better. Their young core group of guys are just starting to come into their prime, the early 20s. They've got a lot of upside. Their defense is good. Their goaltending is still going to be there. They don't have cap issues as it stands right now because their young core group of guys haven't been into the position to get paid. So they're going to continue to get better. So you have to look at it and you say, well, boy, you know, they're only going to get better with the experience that they had. They lost in the Cup final. Sometimes they say you have to lose to win. Blackhawks kind of went through that thing with Taves and Kane when they first came in. So you got to beware of a team like the Nashville Predators. And you say, what do we need to do? Because they're going to be in our division. We're going to play them. We're going to probably meet them again next year if we want to get to the Stanley Cup. You look at it and say, well, we need to be a little bit more grittier. We need to have a little bit more size that we can play with in the playoffs to match a team like Nashville who just outworked and gritted the Blackhawks in a lot of ways. So you look at that and you say it makes sense. You bring in a different type of player that plays a different game. He's younger. He's excited to be here. I know in all the comments that we've heard that he's really excited to come, to a franchise that is established right now and good rather than going through this building process that, you kind of touched on where they don't have a deep team in Arizona. So a lot of good things can come out of a trade like this where you look at the position of Connor Murphy, that he's just got to be excited to come in here. And he's going to be put in the right pecking order, not being playing too much ice time. You rely on Duncan Keith and Seabrook to be playing those big minutes against the key players. You put him in a different slotting position on the defenseman there. He'll play in the top four, there's no question about that. But it's going to take a little bit of pressure off him to not be the guy that they kind of forced on him in the top two pair, in the top 1-2 with Ekman-Larsson.
In the midst of our conversation yesterday over the phone when we were talking about the Nicklas Hjalmarsson deal with the Arizona Coyotes, while we were on the phone, it didn't take very long, and then all of a sudden another deal comes down, and the Blackhawks reacquire Brandon Saad, send Artemi Panarin to the Columbus Blue Jackets. There's more in there as well. The Blackhawks also pick up Anton Forsberg. Talk to the Columbus coaching staff. They really like him. This is a great fit for the Blackhawks. But with Brandon Saad, just from a hockey perspective, as some of the picks are starting to be made here very quickly in the second round, and some transactions are starting to take place. But from a hockey perspective, and you talk about some of the things that we saw in that Nashville series, in reacquiring a guy like Brandon Saad, you have a guy who's adept at playing within the dots, in the middle, in the interior of the ice, and that's where things get done at the offensive end.
Especially in the playoffs, when you look at how the games are won, it's all about getting people to the front of the net. Every coach talks about it. When you lose a game, well, we need more people. We need more traffic towards the front of the net. Goaltenders are too good. The game is too good. The players are better than they were at any point in the history of this game as far as conditioning and the way that they approach the game. Their nutrition, their training is great. But when you look at the Blackhawks and you say sometimes because they're so skilled, they play a little bit too much on the perimeter. It's about getting to the middle of the ice. And you know that Brandon Saad is one of those type of players that will go to into the high traffic areas. We saw it when he won the Cup here with the Blackhawks. He's a big, strong, powerful guy that is still only 24 years of age. A ton of upside to his game still as it evolves. but he's going to come back as a different player, more mature player. He had a different role in Columbus. He's going to come back here with a little bit more of authority inside the locker room, the ability to kind of speak up a little bit more. Not that that's particularly his makeup. It's not quite how he's wired. But at the same time, you know what you're going to get in Brandon Saad. It's not like you're bringing back a Johnny Oduya at the end of his career to fit a spot for a small one at a time. You're looking at Brandon Saad for a lengthy amount of time. He's got 4 years left on his deal, on the six-year deal that he signed when he left the Blackhawks, and you didn't want him to go at that point either. But because of the salary cap restrictions that they had, you couldn't take on that salary at that point. Now you look at it and you say, okay, you come back here, and then it's a good fit for us. There's some cost certainty that they have for, you know, a bunch of more years, and it's a good fit. Everybody's going to miss Panarin, and we can touch on that a little bit more.
Troy Murray, Judd Surratt, we're here on the NHL draft floor, the 2017 entry draft here in Chicago for the very first time at the United Center. If you want to join us, at Judd, J-U-D-D underscore Surratt, S-I-R-O-T-T, or at Muzz, M-U-Z-Z, 19. We've got plenty to come. We'll hear from the president and CEO of the Blackhawks next on 720 WGN. Judd Surratt, Troy Murray here from the United Center, right on the draft floor. Day two of the 2017 entry draft here in Chicago, and it's here for the very first time, in part thanks to the man who joins us next, and that's the president and CEO of the Blackhawks. That is John McDonough. John, thanks for jumping on. First and foremost, I know when you had made the announcement about bringing the draft here to the United Center, you were hoping that Stan Bowman would not trade that first-round pick. How much did he make you sweat yesterday?
Well, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. First of all, Jed, the one thing I realize since I've joined the Blackhawks, nothing and nobody are stationary. So things evolve. anything can happen. Our theme had been 2 days, 10 picks. Well, we didn't quite make it. You know, we moved one before that. But, you know, we're thrilled. This is an extravaganza for our fans, for the city. The mayor was here yesterday when we went over to the new practice facility with Rocky and myself and Patrick Kane. And it's been a great weekend. It's great to have the city of Chicago on display.
When you look at going back a little bit, you had the opportunity to put Chicago on the map as far as hosting the draft for the first time ever in the city of Chicago. There's a lot of preparation that goes on, obviously, behind the scenes to make an event like this happen. Your thoughts on having the ability to bring it here, and how has it worked out so far? Has the city embraced it the way that you thought it would?
It succeeded, Troy, my wildest expectations. The city has really embraced it. The event sold out both Friday and Saturday. We had the fan fest outside. Thankfully, the weather was perfect. So, from all indications, the only thing yet to be seen is we have to make sure that we get the picks right. But it's been great. The interest level's high. You know, since Rocky took over in 2007, there's been a cultural explosion here, and part of that is being able to acquire the draft. We've got Gary Bettman on speed dial, and we talked to Gary, and anything that the league, whether it's going to Europe or outdoor games or hosting the draft, we're in. I tell Gary all the time, just count us in. We want to participate. We want to be visible. We want to be on a big stage all the time, primarily for the Stanley Cup Finals.
I know you had joked yesterday you were hoping to have this event outside, but in the big picture, obviously bringing the Winter Classic to Wrigley Field and the Blackhawks being involved in outdoor games at Soldier Field and then playing outdoors in Washington and playing outdoors in St. Louis, what sort of cumulative effect have all of these events, including the NHL draft, had on the brand, had on the franchise?
Well, I think it's taken it to a much higher level, that the interest is so strong. You know, being able to play on New Year's Day, or being part of something that networks are supporting and the league is supporting, and the Blackhawks are respected now. I think they're relevant again, not just exclusively because we've won three Stanley Cups, but you know, you guys both know, especially you, Troy, you know, our fans come heavy on the road. They follow us wherever we go. There's great interest in the brand, and we're fortunate to have great people in our organization. Stan Bowman, Al McIsaac, Jay Blunk, they do a great, great job. All of our scouts that are here today are so committed to doing this. But we have to keep this momentum going. It was disappointing that the season ended so abruptly, and we're doing everything we can to change that.
I know that one of the things that you want to do with the organization within the city of Chicago, and actually within North America and the world, is build on this product, that the brand that is here in Chicago. And I know that one of the things that the Blackhawks have a lot of purpose to is expanding the fan base. You have a great fan base here in Chicago, and obviously, you know, packing the building and stuff. But how important is it to embrace the casual fan that can now look upon the Blackhawks and say, hey, this is something I might want to be interested in. The guy that wasn't maybe there 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that now you can approach and comes to the fan fest but doesn't necessarily come into the draft. How important is that to the Blackhawks?
Well, we have an obligation to try to introduce as many people as we possibly can to this. A lot of it is through social media. I'm not going to get into specifics on social media because I'll embarrass myself. But probably the two of you. But that plays such a huge, significant role in all of this. And I think this has been an awakening for our fans over the last 10 years. There's no better sport. There's no better game to see live. You know, I think we have a very robust television and radio package with WGN TV, WGN Radio, and Comcast. Obviously, through Blackhawks.com and Blackhawks TV, we've exposed this to tens of millions. We tried to humanize and introduce our players as many ways as possible for them to get a little different perspective of our guys. So it's critical that we continue to introduce people to not only the Blackhawks, but to the NHL.
John, one of the things that you've talked about since coming on board is that change is necessary in order to be nimble, in order to adapt. What's it been like to see the organization embrace that and go through that here during the offseason?
From day one, it's what we talked about. Change is imminent. It's going to happen. If we're talking about it on the player side, we're in a salary cap era. I mean, ideally, I think in a perfect world, you win three Stanley Cups, you keep the team the same, the players don't make any more money, and they don't age. Well, that doesn't necessarily work that way. So you're always evolving. I mean, on the business side, it's all about creativity and innovation, trying things that have never been done before. And Stan and Joel and the hockey operations people, they've got a tough job. They've got a tough job because they've got to reinvent this every single year with a different roster. And, you know, the bar is very high here. Our expectations are to win and win consistently.
John, Judd and I were kind of touching on it before you came on the air, the importance of building through the draft. The importance of picking these players and getting the right type of player, how the character is, how they're wired mentally, what their approach is. What you've seen within the Blackhawks organization, it's got to be pretty impressive the way that they've developed these younger players, drafted these younger players, and to see this whole process kind of pan out.
I think Mark Kelly, Troy, is the best director of amateur scouting in the NHL. You know, he's got a tough job. It's kind of a wonderful dilemma when you're drafting every year between 25 and 30, so it makes his job that much tougher. But if you don't draft well and you don't develop well, you have no chance because of the salary cap. You can't delve into the free agent world very often. So it's really incumbent upon Mark and all of our scouts to make sure that they get these picks right. So I had the privilege to be in a couple of the meetings and participate from, when I say participate, listening, not participate in any selections. But I know how hard they work. It's kind of a titles be damned atmosphere. They challenge each other, and it's very healthy.
But this was also something that came from the very top of the organization. The owner of the Blackhawks, the chairman, Rocky Wirtz, this was a crusade for him, wasn't it, to improve drafting and developing for the organization?
Judd, we expanded our staff significantly in the last 10 years because we understand this is the most important organic part of our organization, that you have to draft well. These 2 days are the most important part, certainly, of the offseason, and we've got to do the best we can and have the best people to try to get it as right as we possibly can. As we talked about yesterday, the important part, see our future. You're going to see these guys going forward. We hope you see all of them. But hopefully these guys play an important role going forward. But that was an initiative, especially on the development side, that Rocky emphasized, that we got to make sure once we draft them, they're ultimately prepared, even before they go to Rockford to play in the National Hockey League.
That's the nuts and bolts of it with the players-wise. You look at the facility-wise that you have here at the United Center, brand-new facility coming up across the street, which will be ready early on in the next year's season. How important is for the Blackhawks and the organization to have that type of facility that not only they can utilize, but the community of Chicago?
It's very important. You know, 125,000 square foot, two-sheet, state-of-the-art facility that we're going to dedicate, Troy, about 10 hours, 20 hours a week to the community. And as you had mentioned before, introducing more people to the game. But this is probably the exclamation part on all of this. You know, we started out 10 years ago. We were at a fine facility in Bensonville on the Edge, and then we graduated to Johnny's West. And we just needed, for this franchise, we needed to have our own practice facility, and it was Rocky's vision to turn this into also a community facility. What we're finding out now from the demand of ice, the demand is far exceeding the inventory. We've just been blown away by the demand for every conceivable league that you can imagine that people want to be part of our facility.
Would that have happened 10 years ago?
Well, you'd have to tell me. I wasn't here 10 years ago, so I don't know. I mean, I think this is growing. We talked yesterday when we had the discussion with the University of Illinois where they're going to explore the possibility of being the first Division I program here in the state of Illinois. There are now 84 players in Division I hockey that have to go outside of our state that don't have the opportunity to play in their own backyard. So my answer, Troy, would probably be I don't think so. I hope that the success of the Blackhawks has certainly helped to expand the interest level and participation. I think if you were to ask Annie or some of the others, they would say absolutely.
John, let's shift over to Marion Hosa. We get the news a few days ago that Marion will not play for this upcoming season. As a guy who sits in your perspective, and we talk about culture all the time, both on the ice and in the organization, what has he meant to the team during his tenure?
Yeah, to try to put it into words, the importance of Marion Hosa, integrity, character, arguably the best guy I've ever been around in sports. He's a mentor, a role model. He's great. He's one of these guys that is curious, tell me about you, and I think a leader on the team. I think people look up to them and they say, look, if you were to develop a manual and just say, how do you comport yourself and conduct yourself as a professional on and off the ice, Marion Hosa's picture would be on the cover of it. So it wasn't easy. He's been dealing with this for the last few years, and you know, it's been very, very noble of him. And I think within the best interests of Marion, his family, he's absolutely doing the right thing.
I've always said that, and our alumni honored Marion last year at our annual luncheon, that I challenge anybody who's ever met, played with, or played against Marion Hosa to say a bad word about him. You just can't do it. He's one of those individual players that you cheer for. He's a great guy. He does what he gets it.
Well, he does get it. And I remember those remarks were so poignant when you made those, Troy. I think there's a certain humility that he has that is so unique for a superstar player. He never wants to be in the center of attention. He has great respect for the game. He has great respect for people. You know, he's a Chicago Blackhawk. I hope he's always a Chicago Blackhawk.
Just a few more questions for the present CEO of the Blackhawks, John McDonough, as the Blackhawks will pick a little bit later here in the second round of the draft, and they have a flurry of picks, including yesterday 11 picks in the NHL entry draft. John, a month from now, the pace is still going to stay high. It's the 10th anniversary of the Blackhawks convention. What's in store?
Well, we're excited about it. It's right smack dab in the middle of the summer, and 15,000 people, converge on the Hilton to celebrate their allegiance to the Chicago Blackhawks. It's great. It's a springboard in the next season. There's going to be a lot of introductions on new players and new staff with the addition of Ulf Samuelson and Don Granato as our coaching staff. And we try to make that as interactive as we possibly can, and really break down those walls between the fans and the players and the front office. They have an opportunity to ask general manager questions, head coach questions, players questions. It's entertaining. Broadcasters questions, and it's a great event. It's been sold out every year. I think it's sold out this year in about 7 hours, so we think it's here to stay.
I think when you talk to a lot of people in Chicago, a lot of people from out of town come in for the convention. The popularity of the Blackhawks has become that big where they want to come in and get an opportunity to see some of the players and interact with the organization for that weekend. I know that it's exciting for me to come down there, and even for the older players, you welcome back the alumni, which you've always said is a huge part of the organization. Not forget the past people. Right now, the Blackhawks are utilizing guys like Ben Eager, Daniel Carcillo, Adam Burris is doing a lot of stuff. How important is for those recent players that have just kind of graduated from playing in the National Hockey League to still be a big part of the franchise?
Troy, it's very, very, very important to me that we recognize them as family members. They were here before. players that leave our organization, we're very, very fortunate, and I don't think it happens everywhere, that players want to come back here and play a role of some sort. So we try to do everything we can. You'd mentioned Daniel Carcillo and Ben Eager, and there's certainly others that could be announced sometime in the near future.
But Jamal Mayers, who does
Jamal Mayers, absolutely. You know, Steve Conroy on the broadcast, yourself, Eddie Olczyk, so many others that want to be a part of it. But we needed to define that bridge between the past and the present. So when we did come here 10 years ago and bringing back Bobby and Stan and Tony and ultimately Dennis, you have to do that because with this new fan base, they had to understand from a historical perspective what this was and is all about. So it's been great. It's going to continue, and we have a lot of respect for everybody that's ever put on that Blackhawks uniform.
Last thing before we spring you, as a guy who's the present CEO of a team who likes to push the envelope, who likes to be on the cutting edge and likes to do things that are new and different, what are we going to see on Twitter?
Yeah, you know, I'm a receiver on Twitter. I think there was one time, Judd, I inadvertently sent one.
You're testing it out.
I panicked. I called Jillian. I said, "Dear God, I don't know what I sent out." you've probably done that, Troy. But no, I'm all over Twitter every day. I'm just not. There's really nothing that I have that's compelling for me to go on there. But if I do, Judd, you'll be the first one.
John, thank you for jumping on.
All
this
right.
is a fabulous event. Appreciate
Great.
It.
Nice to be with you. Thank you. Okay,
thanks,
guys.
That's John McDonough, the president and CEO, 720 WGN. Welcome back to the United Center. Judd Trott along with Troy Murray. We're live here on the NHL draft floor, the 2017 entry draft here in Chicago for the first time. And we just had a chance to visit with the president and CEO of the Blackhawks, John McDonough. One of the things that we talked about, some of the changes and needing to adapt around the National Hockey League. Some of those changes are also exhibited on the coaching staff. We're going to see a couple of new assistants on the bench and in the organization, and one of them with some serious Chicago ties, and that is Don Granato, who joins the team as an assistant coach. Donnie, first of all, congratulations. Thanks for sitting down. What's it like being back home again and with the Blackhawks?
Well, that one may take some time to answer, a little bit surreal. And I just talked to Troy as well. It's a job. I mean, you take this knowing the job part of it. We're all in this profession and know the intensity and the demand day to day. That's really the focus. I can tell you everybody around me is excited. Certainly family and friends in the area that I'm back in Chicago. I'm excited to be back in Chicago. But by no means underestimate the work that's needed in the jobs we hold. So I think I'll get more and more excited as we go. But that seemed to be the prevailing, you know, focus or consumption to this point.
You might just have to get a suite to accommodate all the ticket requests that you're going to get here.
Well, my parents, the last few winters have gone to Florida. I think they're going to spend less time in Florida now. And they're happy. They're as excited as can be because both Tony and I were coaching together at the University of Wisconsin, so they could only watch about 40 games a year. Now they just added more than 80 games to that. 40, so they're happier than happy because they can watch over 100 hockey games now.
Let's go back a little bit, Donnie, and talk about the process of kind of how this, and you know, you've been around hockey and maybe give a little bit of the background to the listeners out there of, you know, where you've been and the process of how this kind of came about in the short term for you to get the position here with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, well, Joel and I was fortunate enough to work with the St. Louis Blues while Joel was the head coach there. I was the head coach in the American League. We were there 4 years, maybe 5 years, and Joel was unbelievable for me as a young coach, as a coach breaking into the pro level at that point. I'd come from the USHL and then the East Coast League and then was with the Blues in the American League. And Joel included me in all his meetings, training camp, the entire training camp, even postseason when we'd go there. We'd have organization meetings with the general manager and assistant general manager and Joel was always very, very supportive of me as a younger coach, as a new coach coming in the organization. So that helped in this situation, obviously, the familiarity there. And then Joel and Tony worked together in Colorado,
right,
for 4 or 5 years. So Joel's been close to our family since then. And when he called to see if I had interest, I think he called Tony first to talk to
about that, and Tony was excited for me to have that as a potential opportunity. And then from that point, one thing led to another, and here I am.
In addition to that, though, how did your relationship with Stan Bowman also start to evolve because of your work with the U.S. national team?
Yeah, I had players like Tyler Mott and John Hayden, Anthony Lewis. Those three were all drafted the same year off the team I had coached at the national team. So, and had known Stan, you know, prior to that. And Stan and I have always connected just like we all do with the common passion of hockey and, you know, specifically development and new, what's new to the game and you know, what's the edge. Where's the game going to be in 3, 4, 5 years? And, you know, for me, that's been how I've had to survive as a coach. I didn't play in the NHL. I knew, you know, from the outset, my first job in Green Bay, that I knew I had to win and accomplish as a coach, or I wasn't going to move up the ranks at all. And so that is studying the game, learning the game, and trying to learn what might be next in the game. It was a blast working with the U.S. team. Again, you get connected with everybody here on this draft floor. I was there, fortunate to be with USA Hockey for 5 years there, and had multiple conversations with all these guys on the draft floor about projections and players they may take, and then afterwards, players they took. And it forces you to think about the game differently, and it certainly forces you to think about development and maximizing your players.
One of the things that we were talking to John McDonough about, and what is important, and one of the main reasons I think that you were brought into the fold, is that development process that you're very familiar with. You're familiar with, as you mentioned, some of the players within the Blackhawks organization that went through the system. But how important is that in today's game to have that development aspect a part of an organization?
Well, I think the way the salary cap, the structure of things now with the CBA, I think players, they're put in the NHL at a younger age because of their talent. But their game knowledge and maybe their life experience isn't there yet. So you're putting a younger product with all this wealth of skill, but it's not really effective yet in how to win a hockey game. And our business is all about winning. So you take this great skill, and they've had guys like Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk and Zach Werenski. Well, they came to us with all this skill, but how are they going to impact winning? And that was always the focus for us at the national team program. And it was fun for me because I went to the national team program coming back from coaching at the professional level. So I had that hindsight. I said, okay, these kids are going to leave me. And they're going to have to try to be successful then in somebody else's locker room. So challenged our coaching staff to coach them for when they left us, not for when they're here. And look at it differently. And that was a blast to do. But again, it starts with the premise of these kids all have talent. That's going to be good enough to get them an opportunity to play in the NHL. But are you going to impact winning? How effective are you going to be with that talent? And that's a whole different ballgame because there's lots and lots of talent. There's 1,000 players talented enough to be in the NHL, and they're not. And you know that, Troy.
Right.
They're in the AHL. They're in the KHL. They couldn't do it. They had a 100-game tryout, but they didn't help that team win, so they're over in the KHL now. No one else signed.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So when I went back to coach there, that was the process of thinking. And I'll tell you, it was a lot of fun to do that. And, you know, for us here, I know, you know, we're one of those teams that has a lot of young guys that we want to impact winning.
You heard a cheer here on the arena floor because the Blackhawks are about to make their second-round pick here at 57 in the second round. But, Donnie, I want to build on what you were talking about. One of the things that Stan and Joel had both mentioned when they talked about you coming onto the staff was your ability to connect to some of those young players so you can get exactly what you're talking about, so they can develop in the ways that you want. What's the key to doing that?
Boy, there's a lot of intangibles with anything and connecting with anybody. I think it starts with respect. You know, again, it's a mutual respect. And I think the fun thing for me is knowing the organization you're coming into. It's an unbelievable organization. I mean, we all know that. The people of Chicago know that. And Joel, and I really fully believe, he's the best coach in the National Hockey League. And so for me, I'm walking into a great situation, and our players, I think the first thing, you know, they need to realize too is what a great situation it is. And I think they do. I think for younger players, you know, there's so much going on, but I think they need to connect with that. Connect with how great a situation they have right in front of them. And I think you start with that. I mean, you know, working with USA Hockey, it was getting our players, like Austin Matthews, to connect with what a great opportunity he had as a young guy.
You can go in, Donnie, with a, you know, an overall kind of idea of how you want to develop the players, but how important is it to get inside each individual's brain, the way that he is wired, and figure out how to get the best out of that individual compared to another guy who's wired a different way?
That's a key. I mean, there's no question that is a key, and that's the challenge. But to me, that's the fun. That's the intrigue. That's the part you love, is trying to maximize each guy, knowing they're different, and you're going to need different. There's different ways to go about helping them get to their max. But that's something I've always been fascinated with. I mean, Troy, you know, I grew up as one of six kids, and whenever you look at your family members, you're like, oh my God, you see that you're a brother, but you also see, holy cow, are we different? And I always enjoyed, you know,
good
I
or bad.
And good or bad, exactly. Well, Tony was bad. I mean, I was good, of course. But you know, we reflect, and now as adults, we joke, we laugh about how different we are as six different kids that are all in the family. So you have that strength of family, and we're all close, but it's amazing the difference. And I reflect a lot of my coaching is simple. You reflect on what your parents did. My parents were the first coaches we had in dealing with six kids trying to get them out the door. You know,
you got a good family. Yeah. I mean, I know them.
We're fortunate to that. We realize that as we get older, how fortunate we were to grow up the way we did. But you know, so I dealt with that or not even knowing, unbeknownst to me, as a kid. Think about how different our personalities were, yet we had the same mom and dad and had to do things, you know, collectively.
You think?
You know, for the thing, yeah.
The Blackhawks, with their second pick here in the entry draft, have taken another defenseman, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see this kid or not. His name is Ian Mitchell, 5'11", 173, a native of your hometown, St. Albert, Alberta, in Canada, played for the Canadian national team. Did you have a chance to see him play a little bit when the national team for the U.S. had a chance
to play
the Canadians?
Real quickly before you answer, I know the family. Which is kind of funny. I mean, you know, St. Albert's not a big
sorry,
place.
Donnie, I'm just going to go to Troy. Thanks for coming.
But it's pretty cool.
Go to where the knowledge is, Judd, and I don't have any in this.
I wasn't sure if you had a chance to run up against him, but how well do you know the family?
Well, I mean, I know the family. I mean, they've been around St. Albert for a long time, and they're good people, and I have never met Ian. But familiar with the family, and he's playing out in Spruce Grove, which is the AJHL league that I was actually drafted out of as well. Glenn Hall lives out in that area. Grant Fear is a big part of that area as well, so that it's a nice little hockey area just outside of Edmonton, and yeah, it'll be exciting to see another St. Albert kid come into the NHL.
Donnie, I know you've already started to have some of these conversations with Joel about how that he wants to use you on the coaching staff. You know, what are some of his initial thoughts? How do they want to try and use you for this upcoming season, whether it's pre-scouting, special teams, eye in the sky? What sort of conversations can you let us in on?
Yeah, I can't let you in on a lot, Judd. I think...
Smart man.
I think, you know, Joel, we've talked a lot about it. I think that it's going to be a process as well. Anytime you add something that Joel has had it in his mind for a while, you know, that the potential of adding somebody, and then, you know, the urge to add somebody. So we've talked about a lot of different ideas that Joel has for this position. I think we'll work as a staff on that to see how we can maximize myself as a now another coach on the staff, and that's another beauty of training camp. I think that'll be a big part of the process for us as a staff to figure out where we're all best used. And you know, Joel's been in this game a lot, so it's going to be an easy read and react for Joel as it plays out through the training camp with the guys. And I look forward to that. I'm excited for that, to see how this will evolve and be implemented. And it's, again, that's where I'm excited. The work of it is really exciting for me.
You had to be excited and happy about what happened last year at the University of Wisconsin. You and Tony took over the program that was heading in the wrong direction, had been in some trouble as far as, you know, the status of one of the destinations in collegiate hockey. Turned it around real quickly. How fun was that in that whole process and working with Tony?
Unbelievably fun. And now that I've been faced with the reality that I'm leaving the University of Wisconsin, I'm grateful that we had a year together. I thought we'd be together for a couple years or 3 or 4 years. I knew when we took Wisconsin, we took it, Troy, and you know how passionate you are about where you play. You know, a great hockey spot in North Dakota. And we watched our program as alumni, and we watched it fall and really hit rock bottom. And when the athletic director called Tony a year ago to offer Tony the position, he made it clear, well, I'm not going to take the position to Coach Alvarez unless I can bring in Mark Osiecki and my brother. And Coach Alvarez, now the athletic director, said, let's get that done. If you can bring those two guys in and you'll do it, we'll get something done. And we all went there most out of a feel for a sense of obligation. Like, this is our university. It gave us so many great things in life that we use, and they've hit rock bottom, and we felt we could help them get it turned around. So it was awesome to go in there. The players, I mean, we're in this business at a coaching level. You love the players. I mean, we all would have played as long as we could have, and it's awful when you got to hang up your skates. But the next best thing is being in that locker room still and competing still. And so we got a chance to go in that locker room and get the kids excited about hockey and being a Badger. And really, that was the number one thing we did. You know, it wasn't systems. It wasn't any trick things. It was let's get you guys passionate about not afraid to make a mistake anymore and passionate about playing. It's amazing how far we got just with those simple concepts, and a lot of fun to do it.
I had, great times at University of North Dakota, and actually we beat Wisconsin in the NCAA final in 1982.
I don't remember that.
So my son decides to go to Wisconsin. I go, Blake, you realize you're killing me here. You can't go be a Badger. Next worst thing would have been a Gopher.
Smartest, so he's the smartest one in the family.
By far.
Yes, I think I can vouch for that. Last thing, Donnie, I know Troy was joking. Because you have so much family here, maybe you should get a suite. Have you already started to institute rules for the family on ticket requests for the upcoming season?
No, but I will. Mom and Dad will be taken care of for sure. And after that, we'll see.
Donnie, yeah. It's great having you on board. Thanks for sitting down and being so generous with your time. Really appreciate it. Look forward to having you around here.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. That's Donnie Granato. We'll bring you back to the NHL draft in a moment. 720 WGN. To the United Center, the 2017 NHL Entry Draft. Blackhawks making a selection here in the second round of a defenseman, Ian Mitchell. They've taken defenseman here with their first two picks. And before we get out of here at 11 o'clock live here on the stream on WGNRadio.com, we hope to have a visit with the team's first-round pick from late last night, and that was Henry Jokijärvi. So we look forward to having him on. And he was a terrific character and a big Blackhawks fan growing up, having a chance to watch this team hoist the cup back in 2010. And apparently his family has a relationship with former Blackhawks defenseman Kimmo Timonen. Troy, you and I had a chance to just visit with one of the new assistant coaches of the Chicago Blackhawks, and that is a local product, and that is Donnie Granato. But the Blackhawks are going to have another assistant on that bench, and that is Alf Samuelson, a guy that you had a chance to play with and against for many years in the NHL.
Well, I hated playing against him. Just a nasty, miserable guy out there on the ice, and he was one of those guys that everybody around the NHL hated him and wanted to take his head off. But when you flip it around and you're playing with him, you love the guy. He's got a great attitude. He works extremely hard. He takes a lot of pride. Is a very professional coach as far as the way that he approaches it. He's very well prepared, and I think that that's important. And he does have a relationship with Joel Quenneville playing in Hartford together as well, so there is some familiarity of Ulf Samuelson and Donnie Granato with the head coach Joel Quenneville, so that's important. There's going to be some chemistry there that has been there in the past, but Ulf is a guy that is going to work with the defenseman. He was a great defenseman. He knows the game in and out as far as the little nuances that you can do within the game, within the rules, to be successful. And I think that's important because of the way that the game is called right now. You're always looking for some kind of an edge. And if there was ever a guy in the NHL that found that edge, the way that he could play without, you know, crossing that line, it was Joel Samuelson. And I think it's a really good fit. Mike Kitchen did a wonderful job here. But again, sometimes, as you heard John McDonough talk about, change is good. And sometimes you need that fresh, you know, voice inside the locker room and inside the coach's room. And you're going to get that with Donnie Granato. He's a very sharp individual, as is Joel Samuelson. So you look at these guys that were added to the coaching staff, and you can only think that things are going to be good as far as these two guys coming in and helping the younger players. Donnie's great with developing and working with the younger players that the Blackhawks are planning on having, you know, for several years. He's familiar with some of the players within the organization. He went through the U.S. program. So for those kids, it's an easy adjustment to have him behind the bench and on the ice working with those guys, because there's an understanding of the relationship that happens between the coach and the player. And I think that's important that you have that. And also, you know, you're going to bring in a lot of enthusiasm between the two new guys. Kevin Dineen's done an excellent job as well. So you look at the coaching staff, you look at some of the adjustments that have been made within the organization, even up to this point, with trades and then losing a player like Marian Hossa. Those are big voids that have to be filled, and the coaching staff is going to work with these players to fill those voids.
Had a conversation with Ricky Olczyk, Eddie Olczyk's brother, who's the assistant general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes. That's where Ulf was last year as the head coach of their American Hockey League team. And one of the things that Ricky really raved about, and the organization really raved about, was his ability to communicate with players.
I think that's important in today's game. When you get the next pick is coming up to Chicago as well. But if you look at the players in today's game, the head coach of a team in any professional sport has a job to oversee everybody. But the coaching staff within, underneath the head coach, has different responsibilities to work with those players in different areas. And I think that you've got two really good guys to go along with Kevin Dineen in that area that, you know, Joel Samuelson is going to work with these younger players and develop them, grow that relationship that they can do after practice, during practice, when Q is working with everybody else as a group. They can go over and work with those players individually. I think it's important that when, you know, a lot of, as you heard Donnie talk about, a lot of, you know, ex-players step right into a role, but they hadn't been there before in different areas. You hadn't seen the development of younger players. You haven't seen, you know, the 18, 19-year-old kids and how you work with them and where their mind is at and what they're going through at that stage of their life. Once you get in the NHL, the one thing that I've really found out as a 19-year-old, you know, coming out of the University of North Dakota, I'm there with 20 guys, 25 guys who are my age within 4 years. We're all single. We're all, you know, doing stuff at that age that you normally would do. But you're playing, you know, on a team. Now you come to Chicago, and you're playing as a professional, and it's a job. At North Dakota, it's not a job. You're there on a team, and you're getting an education, whatever it may be. When you turn pro, it's a different animal. There's a lot of free time. There's a lot of stuff that you don't realize that, you know, one guy who could be sitting next to you could be your best friend, but it could be between you or him who makes the team. And there's a lot of different things that you have to kind of develop within these young minds coming into the NHL. And both Ulf, who's dealing with the head coach in the American League, you see those younger players who are striving to get to the National Hockey League. And there's players there that will never get to the National Hockey League but still have passion for the game of hockey, and how you adjust in treating those players the same but differently as individuals. Donnie Granato's gone through that at the U.S. developmental program, where he knows he's only got them for a couple years, and he's grooming them for success as they move forward, giving them the tools to understand what it needs to make it to the National Hockey League. And I think that you've got some really good combinations in the coaching staff now with these guys coming in here that have a real good understanding of the young players and the mindset of these young players of where they need to be successful at the NHL level.
And if you backtrack his work, and really everybody on that coaching staff, it will be important, because if you look at the Blackhawks back end, beyond Keith and Seabrook, there's some fundamental change back there. Yes, you'll have Michael Kepney back. You sign a free agent from the Czech League in Jan Ruda, who will join the team. But all of a sudden, you're starting to see some changes that are taking place on defense. Gustav Forsling will hopefully be a regular for the Blackhawks in the back end. We'll see what they do here at the draft, what they do between now and July 1st, because certainly rosters for the Blackhawks and a lot of teams are very fluid. But he has a very big job. This coaching staff has a very big job with the way that blue line core is going to be functioning.
Yeah, it's going to be a big challenge. And if you look at, really from what the Blackhawks had last year in the top guys that were playing on the defensive side of it, you've only got Keith and Seabrook left. Michael Roosevelt is still going to be back next year, in kind of the same capacity. He's going to be in and out of the lineup at certain times, depending on the progress of these younger players. But with these younger guys on defense, for years it's kind of been Keith, Seabrook, and Nicholas Hjalmarsson. You bring back Brian Campbell. You're sprinkling in a couple young players. It's not going to be that way. You're going to have more significant minutes being played by some of these younger players, and it's important that they understand that not every day is going to be great, not every game is going to be perfect, and not every shift is going to be exactly what you expect. But you build with these guys, you build their confidence, you point out mistakes, point them in the right direction. This is what you need to do, and I think that this coaching staff is really well tooled to do that.
And for defensemen, especially young defensemen, it takes a little bit longer to learn the National Hockey League versus some of the other positions on the ice.
Well, again, you look at the goaltender, and that's why, a lot of the goaltenders take a while, and they play a lot of years in the minors to get to that position, because if they make a mistake, it's in the back of the net. If a forward makes a mistake, you've got another line of your protection there in your defense. If the defense are coming in and, they get put in a tough position, they make a mistake, and it's much easier recognized to the average fan who's in the building to see, well, boy, that guy got burnt on defense. But what happened way up front, you probably didn't notice that guy as a forward didn't have his position, didn't have his responsibility, his accountability, and that puts pressure on the defensive side of it. But those guys, along with the goaltender, are singled out because they're easier to recognize when they make a mistake. For the younger players on defense, and they're getting, as the Blackhawks kind of unfold within the salary cap system that is in place now, they're putting a lot of emphasis on some of these younger players because of the high-paid players that are playing around that. And it's important for these younger players to get the right tutelage and, the right education of how they need to play and take the ups and downs with, the way that they should, that, there's going to be bad days and there's going to be good days, but there's a process that you're building towards, not only each and every season, but once you get into the playoffs, to be prepared to play that. And it's not an easy position as a defenseman.
When I remember talking to Ulf Samuelsson a couple years ago when he was the assistant coach with the New York Rangers, he actually claimed, because he and Joel Quenneville were partners, when they were playing defense for the Hartford Whalers, he claims that Joel invented the can opener.
I wouldn't doubt that. Which is completely illegal in today's game. But what you did is, if a forward was coming down, and do you remember Greg Fox?
Yes.
He was here when I first came here in the early 80s, and he used to drive me nuts because every time I'd come down the ice, he'd put his stick in between your legs. And then you can't turn one way or the other because the stick is in there, and you get twisted all up, and it's the can opener that's in there. And it was, and then just you could push it over, and you're falling down. It was a technique that you used in those days that was totally legal. But now you can't even go close to that. And as soon as somebody puts the stick in between the legs, it's an automatic penalty in today's game. But those are the things that a guy like Joel had to do because, he was a big, kind of stay-at-home defenseman, and they used every little technique that they could to keep the puck out of the net.
Well, Ulf liked to joke that they called him Slow-Mo Joel because he wasn't as fleet of foot as some of the other NHL defensemen. But I'm just thinking about it now, and obviously the game has changed dramatically from when you played, that they actually kept the can opener in the game as long as they did, and that was actually a solid defensive play that they allowed.
Oh, it was a great play. I mean, once you get your stick between the legs of a forward, there's nothing that forward can do because he can't cross over, he can't turn, so you're basically just stuck there. And it drove me crazy because, coming from college and stuff, you didn't see a lot of that. You get into the pro, and these guys know exactly what they need to do. Joel Quenneville was one of those guys that he didn't have the fleetest of foot, so he wasn't the fastest skater out there. So to kind of prevent those things, you play the position right, and you use your stick in the right positions, and you just render the opposition, the forwards, useless.
How often do you watch the game now? We could talk about the draft and some of the other stuff, but when you watch the game now, and you see that the way the game is played, the way the game is called now, do you think to yourself, oh, why did they call it like that a couple of years ago when I was playing?
There was a, they were having some old reruns on TV, and my son and I, Blake, were watching the game, and he hadn't seen one in a long time, and maybe the first time he kind of understood what was going on as far as the rules, the way that they are now, and we were just talking there, he's going, penalty, 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 like every play was on the ice was a hook, a hold, you know, and we were taught that way playing the game. You know, the stick in the midsection coming back through the neutral zone. You know, the league said it's okay to do that. Well, they said, okay, well, now we want to speed up the game, so you have to keep your legs moving, but you can still put your stick into the midsection and hold on to the guy, but you have to keep your feet moving. And then they said, well, no, you can't do it. So all of those old rules, like the corkscrew and the can opener and all this kind of stuff that you had, as a veteran player, you had to adjust your game. And they always talked about the fact that there was a learning curve there for players to try and break the habits that they had for so many years, you know, coming all the way up into the NHL and then using that in the NHL. And all of a sudden they say you can't do that anymore. For what the way the game is played now compared to the way it was before, and obviously there's all kinds of different things, the red line that was taken out, so on and so forth. The game is faster and maybe more dangerous than it's ever been because there's no way to slow the game down. They're talking about putting the red line back in to slow it down a little bit, not allow that speed from one end of the ice to the other to happen as quick as it does now with the long stretch pass. But back in the day, even like a defensive partner, if the puck was dumped in the corner, your defense partner could come across and basically hold up the guy while you went back and got the puck. You can't do that anymore. So, you know, one of the techniques that everybody uses now, it's called a chip and chase. You just chip it in behind the defenseman, and that defenseman has no choice but to turn around and go get that puck. Well, now you've got a guy coming 100 miles an hour as fast as he can. There's no way to slow him down, and you get those, you know, hits from behind and everything that are dangerous. The speed of the game and the overall, you know, force of the way that players are hit in today's game are much different than it was in the past, just because there's no way to protect that, no way to slow players down. I think it's good for the game that it's a faster game, but it's also a more dangerous game because of the speed of the game.
High-speed collisions. Blackhawks continue to make picks as we're deep into round three here at the NHL entry draft at the United Center. We're going to take a timeout here. We'll talk a little bit about some of the cap impacts, that some of the deals that we have seen the Blackhawks make and some of the moves that have taken place, some of the announcements that have taken place here over the next few days, what sort of impact that has, what it means to the organization, plus what it means having Brandon Saad back on this team beyond the skill that he brings. We'll talk about that in a second. 720 WGN.
Well, there's no doubt that getting an old teammate, an old friend back, and another guy that you've shared that same bond that I'm talking about, that friendship and having that experience of winning a Stanley Cup together with a guy like Sauter. Yeah, I guess there is some reconciliation, if that's the proper word, in that, because you know what you're getting, you know what type of guy he is, and you know how he's going to fit in with the locker room and what he's going to bring. So you feel like you were saying a lot of the similar things when he left our locker room 2 summers ago. So yeah, in that sense, it's a win.
That's John of the Taves talking about Brandon Saad returning to the team. The Blackhawks reacquiring Saad yesterday, sending Artemi Panarin to the Columbus Blue Jackets. There's a little bit more involved with the deal, but the Blackhawks get back a familiar face, a guy who played a key role in their top six, winning 2 Stanley Cup titles. And he'll return to the team. And this is a guy with some contract certainty. We can talk about some of the cap impact of having a guy like Brandon Saad back on the team means. Judd Sherrod along with Troy Murray back here at the United Center as the third round continues here in the 2017 NHL entry draft at the United Center. But Troy, what sort of a fundamental change will this bring in Jonathan Taves' game, having his former winger back?
If you look what kind of has been missing here the last few years, it's been that left wing position with Jonathan Taves. You had a real nice fit with Panarin and Anisimov and Patrick Kane, and obviously Panarin was part of the deal that went towards the Columbus Blue Jackets. But you're always looking for that left wing fit with Jonathan Taves, and I think that you know, there was a lot of people that were talking about that the Blackhawks should stop bringing back the players that were here before, but this is a different situation. This is Brandon Sodden. He's 24 years of age, just coming into the prime of his career. You didn't want to lose him a couple of years ago, but you had to. Signed a six-year deal. So what the Blackhawks have done here with Panarin in a position where he was making $6 million for 2 years, if you look at the way it works, he's an unrestricted free agent. After that second year, you have to renegotiate the contract a year from now, to get him under contract. The demand they expected from Panarin was going to be too high of a price to pay in a lot of ways, and I think that when you have the cost certainty for Brandon Saad with four more years at a cap hit of just over $6 million, basically what Panarin is making now in the cap system that the Blackhawks are dealing with right now, that's important. It's really important to have that consistency and stability that you know where you're going to be 4 years from now. Connor Murphy has a five-year deal that comes in just under $4 million. So you've got him locked up, and he's only 24 years of age as well, I think. So there's that cost certainty that they haven't been able to have because they've had to bring in players and let those players go as you retool under the salary cap system when your core guys are making a bulk of what you can spend each and every year. You lose a dynamic scorer in Panarin, but it's a tough decision. You looked at Brandon Saad and the way he's able to play as a bigger body in the playoffs, and that's one thing, again, you recognize that you didn't have when you were playing the Nashville Predators this year, that player that's going to go through the traffic, get to the front of the net. And we all know that, the man-child that we called him when he was here in Chicago before, is that type of player, and the makeup, and it's not like he's a washed up player or a player that's coming in to finish out the tail end of his career or a small piece of the puzzle for a short time. This is a significant piece of the puzzle coming back into the fold, where that there's instant chemistry with him and Jonathan Toews, and even Brandon Saad said he's excited about playing there if it happens. He's not saying, and he's not just penciling in, I'm going to come back and play with Jonathan Toews and everything's going to be great. He said that would be great if that opportunity arises. I would look forward to that again if it does happen. But, he's saying all the right things. And I think there's a maturity level from Brandon Saad that you didn't see a couple of years ago that you are now seeing in his time spent in Columbus. And I think it's a really good learning curve for him to have that opportunity to see how a different organization works, how the chemistry of that locker room could be different than what you have in Chicago. But it's a real nice, comfortable piece for him to come back here, and he's excited to come back here and have that opportunity to have the success with the Blackhawks that he did prior.
I think that's important, though, Troy, because if you remember, just going back to the 2015 Stanley Cup run, late in that series against the Tampa Bay Lightning, Joel Quenneville, as he always does during the course of the regular season and the playoffs, shifted Brandon Saad off of that line and put Patrick Sharp in that spot later in the series. Brandon has found success playing with Toews, playing with Kane, playing lower in some combinations, maybe playing with Marcus Kruger, playing with some different centermen who are not necessarily your top two guys, and I think that's important. But if he does play with Toews, to have success playing with Jonathan, you need to be a straight-line player. That's what he seems to fit and mesh with best. That's a game that Saad plays well.
Yeah, and that's why he can fit in a lot of areas. Like, it's tough to play, and I've always said this, and I've said the last couple seasons, it's not easy to play with Patrick Kane and Panarin. And for those two guys to find the chemistry when they both have very similar games, they both want to have the puck, they want to be in control of the play for their ability to match up and work their magic that we saw for a few years was incredible. But it's not an easy fit for Panarin to go in and play with different players when they don't have that skill set to match what he's playing. You have to have a setup center or a setup player on the line, which Patrick Kane was. Anisimov was a little bit more of a straight line player that, would get out of the way at the right time, figure out what he needed to do defensively to help out those three guys on the ice, and then get to the front of the net. Brandon Saad is a much easier read in the way that he plays the game. It's straight up and down. He's going to be going into the corners. He's going to be driving to the front of the net. He's not a stop-up type of player that Panarin was that you're looking for that shot. That he's going to get into the heavy traffic areas in front of the net on a regular basis. So you have a better understanding of where Brandon Saad is going to be in all areas of the ice compared to a guy like Panarin. So to fit in Brandon Saad in different roles with different players is a little bit easier. And that's not being critical on Panarin, but it's a little bit easier to fit because he's a one, not a one-dimensional player, but a player that has basically the mindset of a straight-line player, and you know where he's going to be.
They're very different players. Brandon Saad can play power play, can play penalty kill, can check, can't play in an offensive role if you need it to. And again, that's not a slight on Panarin. They are different players. But to go further with Saad and Taves, and you know this, the way lines communicate on and off the ice, it's a process. And different lines, different combinations communicate in different ways. And what we've seen in the past is the way that they communicate, the way that they interact, it works.
And that's important. I mean, you have to have that. If you don't have that chemistry that works, you can put two star players on the ice and they just don't have any chemistry. And a lot of times when teams have made trades that they say, you know, this guy is going to be our first line, you know, right winger or whatever, if that matchup with that particular player doesn't work, all of a sudden you're going, this doesn't work and we got to try and figure something else. And Joel Quenneville is as good as any coach in the NHL of looking at the line combinations on any given night or any given period, for that matter, and making adjustments. If you look at even going back to that Tampa Bay series, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves finished up the Anaheim series as line mates. You remember that? So now you move into the Tampa Bay series, and they looked at Tampa Bay as they had the shutdown pairing of Hedman and Stroman. And they says, you know, if we can split up Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves, they've got to play their second and third pairing up against one of those two guys, rather than having those two guys on the ice at the same time that Taves and Kane are. Everybody was very critical of Joel Quenneville, saying, why is he split up Kane and Taves? But they also looked at the Anaheim defenseman, and again, not being critical on the Anaheim defenseman, but they didn't have a strong pairing like Tampa did in their number one pairing. They were a little bit more spread out, so you could double up with Taves and Kane and go at those guys and win that battle. And that's how they ended up winning that series. You look at what he did. I mean, he made the adjustment there. You put Taves and Kane on different lines in that series against Tampa, and it was a better matchup in all areas. Then you added Vermette and Teravainen that came in there, and that was a third combination that was so effective against Tampa Bay, because now you're going up against the third pairing of the, you know, so there was better depth and better balance. But it doesn't mean that just because you have two star players that they automatically chemistry and automatically will be playing together.
We're going to sit down with the Blackhawks' first-round pick here in a second. I think he thinks that he joined the Tampa Bay Lightning. We're going to take a break. 720 WGN. Jumps around Troy Murray back at the United Center, the 2017 entry draft. And yesterday in the first round, the 29th overall pick, the Blackhawks selected Henry Jokiharju, who played in the Western Hockey League, a youngster out of Finland. First of all, Henry, congratulations. Welcome. 24 hours later, what's the experience like coming to Chicago and being a member of the Blackhawks organization?
First of all, thanks a lot, and it's unbelievable. Unbelievable moment for me getting picked, Chicago Blackhawks, and of course, in Chicago, so can't be better, and Taves Kane pronouncing my name, so unbelievable for me.
It was a great moment. You spoke extremely well when they had you up on the Jumbotron here a little bit after the pick was made. Now, I know that there's a lot of anticipation for young players, you know, who are expected to get drafted in the first round. Did you have an idea that you were on the radar for Chicago, or had you heard rumors that other teams were interested in maybe picking you up prior to what Chicago did?
Yeah, obviously, I talked three times in the last week with Chicago. I knew they already knew a lot about me, and I just have that feeling that they're going to pick me up, and my agent have talked with Stan a lot, and I have a great feeling about it before they draft me, like they're going to pick me up, and I was nervous, of course, before it, but...
Were you glad that you were around when Chicago was able
to
pick?
Yeah, of course, I was super glad, and when they trade that 26th pick, I was like nervous. I was like, what are they gonna do?
But I gotta wait for.
Yeah, I gotta wait for seconds still, and but it was really nice.
Henry, go back though, because if I understand things correctly, that going back to 2010 when the Blackhawks hoisted the Stanley Cup, that's when you really became a fan of the organization. You were a Blackhawks fan as a kid in Finland.
Yeah, I was watching like Chicago Blackhawks team a lot than like Kente, Seabrook, Keith, those big time leaders like play under pressure. But for this year, I didn't like want to pick any favorite team, of course, because it's obviously my draft year, so I didn't want to pick any favorite team, and so that's why. But it's always been Chicago for me.
If you look at a current player in the National Hockey League, who would a player that you would kind of model yourself or emulate as far as the way that you play the game?
Oh, I feel like Chris Letang and Pittsburgh Penguins and Sammy Vatanen and Anaheim Ducks. Those two guys are great role model for me, and I spoke once with Sammy Vatanen. He's a really nice guy.
Henry, how important was it for you to come over to North America and play in the Western Hockey League?
That was more than like super. I feel that was really good for me to come over. Like, we have a really good organization in the Winter Hawks, and I feel confident coming over to play, because Finnish hockey is, like, of course, bigger eyes, and we play a lot of trap game, and in Portland we play like Blackhawks, like super fast game, and we go end to end, so I enjoy about it.
You were talking about Mike Johnson, who was a former NHL coach, went back to Portland to coach there. How important it was for you to be under a guy like Mike Johnson, who understands what it takes to play at the National Hockey League level in your development?
That's a huge thing for me, and that was the biggest thing why I go into Portland, and so it's an honor to play for him, and he's a really great guy, and like I enjoy every day, like how smart he is, and I learn every day something new.
Henry, just in that 1 year spent in the Western Hockey League, and then just moving forward, how far did your game come last year? How far does it still need to go? How much do you still need to go?
NHL? Mm-hmm. I feel 3 years, something like that. It's hard to say, but I'll be good with 3 years.
You know, if you talk about, you know, obviously you had some great stats last year as a defenseman in the Western Hockey League. And it's not an easy league. You're playing a lot of games. There's a lot of travel. I'm from out west as well. Grew up in Edmonton, was born in Calgary, so I was very aware of the travel and stuff that was happening there. Your experiences in the Western Hockey League, in a lot of ways, grooms you to play the NHL game, the amount of games that you play before, but your style of system that you play is what the Blackhawks are all about, the puck-moving defenseman, you know, quick movement out of their own end of the ice. Do you feel that your game is suited to what the Blackhawks like to play?
I feel definitely that's why they pick me. They like my game style and like how I play, so they pick me, so I feel that's what they like for me.
Henry, I know you like to play that up-tempo game, but one of the things that I still want to see we can draw out of you, what still needs to grow in your game to reach the National Hockey League level and stay here on a consistent basis?
Of course, getting like stronger, faster, like develop every area, and like I want to develop every day and getting better player, and but probably in front of net, like getting physical.
Have you had an opportunity to see the city of Chicago? In my opinion, this is one of the best cities that you'll ever play in the National Hockey League. Have you had a chance to tour around a little bit?
Yeah, 2 years ago I came from an agency camp, and we were hanging around Chicago. And a week ago I came also for the same agency camp, same kind of, and there was like juniors or agency group, and we were here already a week ago, so I love the city already.
How'd you celebrate last night?
We went to eat, and after that we just go sleep. I was tired.
it's a strenuous day. Wait, yeah. For your name to be called there. So, what was all your family in town? Who was here at the draft?
Yeah, of course. Like my parents, my brother, and my sister, and the sister's boyfriend.
Very cool. Are they sticking around for any length of time? Are you going to stay a few extra days in Chicago, or what's
the
plan?
Yeah, we'll see. I feel like as soon as possible, I'm heading to Finland and Getting back in training and be ready for training camp.
Is it like your head spinning because life has changed dramatically? You got picked in the NHL draft. It's the Blackhawks. Are there just like so many things like going through your head?
Yeah, of course, but I don't want to feel like super good. I want to feel like, of course, confidence, but I don't want to lose my head. I'll just keep my head and getting back work as soon as possible.
It's a great attitude to have. You know, you know that this is the first step in a long process of getting to the National Hockey League. If you look at coming to training camp, how do you want to see the Blackhawks look at your game? And to, you know, you never know what could happen. You could, you know, have a great camp and stick around and, you know, start your career in the NHL. It may not happen, but how do you want to see the Blackhawks look at your game?
I want to, like, look my guy, how is he, and give me some tips, what I can do better. Of course, we're going to work a lot with coaching staff and the coaching staff, too. And, I mean, I don't know about it, but I just want to, they like me a lot.
The other thing, Henry, just as you went through some of the interviews yesterday after you got picked and when you were at the podium, that you got a little jam to your game in addition to that, a little energy, a little passion. Is that something that we can hope to see once you become a part of the organization, start to play in the organization regularly?
Yeah, for sure. I'm, you know, I love hockey, and I even breathe the hockey all the game, and I just think about hockey so much. So I love hockey. I got great passion for hockey, and but I'm still try to not be that serious for hockey.
How grueling is the process? I know it's a lot different, you know, from when my days you didn't have the NHL Combine or anything like that. How grueling of a process is it for players that are projected high in the draft, meeting with all the teams, you know, having the interviews with mental skills coaches and, you know, doing all the testing and stuff? How grueling is that even before you have that opportunity to have your name called?
Oh, of course, it's like it's a big process, like that. Combine was tough. There was a lot of interviews. Those make you super tired, but you have still smile and be like your own self in every interview. And those tests was of course physical stuff, and that was hard. But I feel the all things, like, you just have it, like, enjoy about it, because it's once in a lifetime. And I'm happy that I get picked, Chicago Blackhawks. So now it's over, and I don't have to think about it anymore.
Henry, at the Combine, there's also a lot of interviews, and you're talking to all these different teams. And without naming the team, like, who threw you the strangest question at the NHL Combine when you were going through the interviews?
You're like, who did?
What was the question? What was the strangest question you got at the Combine?
Yeah, probably like pick these five things, like most important, they're not that important. There was like Stanley Cup, NHL, family, law, money, or stuff like that. Like those, everything is
that's
super.
That's a tough question.
Yeah, like
I couldn't pass that.
Yeah, that was a hard one. So.
That's why you went later in the rounds. He's a first round pick. You weren't.
Yeah, exactly.
He answered right.
I had them all in the wrong order.
So what did you answer?
I don't remember. I was so confused about the questions, so I was like, okay, I'm just gonna put them right.
Oh, this was a written test? This wasn't... So this was a little bit different. Like, I know they do a lot of interviews, so this was something you had to fill out, or you just had to...
Yeah, fill out, and that was a question, like, would you rather be, like, good person or good player? Pick one.
Yeah. C, both.
Yeah,
or B.
All of the above.
Yeah, B works every time. If you don't, what is it, A, C, or B, just pick B.
Now, I know you just got picked, but if Stan Bowman lays a contract down, how are you going to, you know, what is the first thing you're going to treat yourself to?
I don't know. Probably going to buy from my brother, like, new golf clubs, I promised for him. And but,
off easy.
Does he need them? Yeah, he could have asked a lot bigger than that.
He won a better, but...
Are you a golfer?
Yeah, kind of a little bit. I'm starting, like, more and more. I used to play golf, like, 4 years ago, just a little bit. But my brother came back home. He's playing Clarkson University. And after a season, he played a lot of golf. And he gave me in the golf, too. So it's fun to play with my brother the golf.
Is there a lot of good golf courses back home?
Yeah, it's really good golf courses in town.
And you can play late this time of year because it's only dark like 2 hours. You can tee off at 11.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I'm not going to – of course, it's going to be a special moment if he's going to put the contract in the table. But I feel it's not going to change my world. I'm going to keep my head and stick my own game.
Henry, thanks for jumping on. Congratulations joining the Blackhawks, and we look forward to seeing you for many, many years here in this organization.
All right, thank you very much.
Henry Yoki-Arhu. We're going to bring you back to the NHL draft in just a moment. Judd Sirott, Troy Murray, 720 WGN.
Back up, down, and around.
Gerard, Troy Murray here for a little bit longer as the NHL draft here at the United Center continues, and we're fortunate to be joined by the Blackhawks' third-round pick, taken 90th overall in the 2017 NHL entry draft, and that is Evan Barrett out of Bristol, Pennsylvania, a centerman, 6 feet, 190 pounds. Evan, congratulations. Thanks for sitting down. So what was your reaction when you heard your name called?
Oh, tears flew up in my eyes. I couldn't believe it. I mean, just like anyone, it's a dream since you were little. And, I mean, to make it come true is all the work you put in. Nothing compares. Nothing compares.
We were talking before you came on the air here that between you and me, of course, you're a Penguins fan. But you're going for a pretty good. You went to a pretty good organization.
Yeah.
You know, how excited were you when you heard your name called? And was Chicago one of the teams that you knew was on the radar that maybe had an opportunity if they could pick you?
Yeah, I knew I had a lot of good conversations with the scouting staff at in Chicago and at the NHL Combine. We had very good meetings, and I knew we had a good relationship with them, and every time a pick of theirs came up, my stomach started to turn. So I kind of knew that Chicago Blackhawks would be the place for me, but it was a matter of when, where in the draft. And lucky enough that it was in the third round, and I mean.
So you knew that this pick was coming up. You knew that the possibility was that Chicago was going to draft you. What emotions were going through your mind at that point?
I don't know.
just yeah. Holding your breath and
holding
not saying
my breath.
Anything.
And then the U.S. national team, and then he pauses. And oh.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful moment.
Yep.
And your family all in town with you?
Yeah,
everything?
My family's all here, uncles and aunts. And it's my billet family back in Ann Arbor's here, and it's great having them here. And yeah, we're all together. We don't get to be together very much. My brother lives in L.A., and we're all split up all the time, so it's great having
everyone
together. Yeah.
Evan, if you can't take us through your game, as you mentioned, you played a couple of seasons with the U.S. national team that's based out of Ann Arbor, but what's your game about, and what do you want to see from yourself as you progress and hopefully make to the National Hockey League and wear that sweater you got on right now on a regular basis with the Blackhawks?
Yeah, I'm 200-foot shutdown center. I can score. I'm versatile. I can play in any role. I can play top six or bottom six. I can help scoring while shutting down guys. I'm good in the D zone and bring my compete to everything. And that's the heart I play with is something that really got me to where I am, and it's something that will forever be what I use. And
next year, you know, just saying that, you know, if you don't make the NHL, I'm not saying that you don't or whatever, what is the next step? Where are you going to be looking forward to playing next year if it's not here in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm headed to Penn State next year for a year at college or however many I need. And
yeah. Great
so
program there, by
yeah.
the way. They've come a long way in a short time.
Unbelievable.
Eddie Olchuk's son had gone
yep.
through the program there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a no-brainer for me. It was 3 hours from home, brand-new program. And they started right away and very competitive right away, and it made it a no-brainer for me.
How much does it help, and how much did you learn from Donnie Granato, who's now an assistant coach with the Blackhawks, yeah. who had a chance to coach with you at the U.S. national team?
Yeah, he's awesome. We keep in touch all the time now, and he's the one who gave me the spot on the team, and he knew I was what I was and what I'm going to be, and he believes in me all as much as anyone does, and it's great having him in this organization, knowing since he helped pick me and has me for U17 year, it's definitely makes it easier.
We had Donnie on a little bit earlier, and he was talking how we were talking about how important it is for the development, you know, of players of your age to make sure that they're ready to take that next step wherever it may be. And he said that's going to be a big part of what he does here on the coaching staff. I know that he's here in the building. I think he's down on the floor. Did you have an opportunity to say hello to him prior to coming and talking to us?
Well, not today, but I ran into him on Thursday, so it was good to see him. I haven't seen him in a while. He just said, I mean, wherever I go, he knows they're going to get someone right, and it just happens lucky enough for myself and him to it's the Blackhawks. And
do you think he had a little input?
I hope so.
Might have to buy him a dinner. Might have to buy him a dinner. Here in the next couple of years, and you mentioned you're going to be playing for Penn State in the Nittany Lions, Tom Pegula, the owner of the Buffalo Sabres, has been a huge part of that program there. But going forward, whether it's Stan Bowman, Joel Quenneville, what do you have to show them from your game here in these next couple of years?
I keep getting better, and I develop every year and every day and get stronger and show that I'm able to play in the National Hockey League for Joe Quenneville and Coach Granato, and just be ready to show them every day that I'm the guy that's going to help them, help the franchise, and be the guy for them.
If you look at the U.S. developmental program, it's a great program, obviously, and it's having a lot of success in grooming players to get to the National Hockey League. As you look into this offseason, what's your focus? Is it speed? Is it building up? Is it getting stronger? Where's the focus on how you're going to train and work out this summer?
Yeah, the focus for me is getting my leg strength and more power in my first couple steps for skating, and that's a big thing for me. And as soon as I'm able to develop that in the next couple of years, I believe I'm ready to play at the next level. And for me, next level, I want it to be the NHL.
What's your goal celebration like?
I don't know. I don't have a special one.
If you could get away with it, what would it be? Because remember, you know, you can't necessarily do shooting anything out of the sky, or, you know, we've seen different guys, and it elicits a different reaction around the league. But if you could get away with it, what would it be?
Or the Superman. We're leaving the chest.
We're going to remember that a couple years from now, Evan, when you score that first NHL goal.
We'll see.
You look at this opportunity, you look at this jersey, I think it's one of the best jerseys in the National Hockey League. At this moment, can you just describe how emotional this is for you to be in this position?
I'm sure I'll never find the words ever to be able to describe what it feels like to wear this such a storied franchise uniform and hopefully one day be able to represent it. I'll never be able to find the words.
Well, looks good on you.
Thank you.
Looks tremendous. Last thing before we get out of here. Ultimately, years down the line, when you make the NHL with the Blackhawks, who are you looking forward to playing against the most?
Probably guys I grew up playing against. The guys on the national team, Josh Norris, all those guys. Those are some of my best friends, and I'm looking forward to playing those guys. And it'll be fun even next year in college playing my best friends. And so be something new, but
it's an exciting time. Congratulations to you on the pick here. Thanks for joining us.
Congratulations. Thanks for jumping on board. Best to you and the family, and enjoy yourself here in Chicago.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You got it. That's Evan Barrett, the Blackhawks' third-round pick in the 2017 entry draft. We'll bring you back in a moment. 720 WGN. Judd Surratt, Troy Murray, a few more minutes here at the United Center on the draft floor of the 2017 NHL entry draft taking place here in Chicago for the very first time. Been joined by a couple of Blackhawks draft picks here. Recently, Donnie Granato stopped by, one of the new assistant coaches. The present CEO, John McDonough, was kind enough to join us for a while. One of the things, Troy, that we have not had a chance to talk about because we referenced what's happened with Marian Hossa and Brandon Saad coming into the organization, the Nicholas Jalmerson trade, bringing in Connor Murphy. There's some activity around the National Hockey League. We just see that the Calgary Flames have picked up Travis Hamonic, a defenseman from the New York Islanders. So we're going to see a lot of changes around the National Hockey League, certainly in the Western Conference and within the Blackhawks' own division.
I see you have it up there. Who else was involved in that deal? Because that was a very highly sought after defenseman that was going to come at a very high price.
I'm looking at it right now. It said the Flames also get a fourth-round pick and send the Islanders a first-round draft pick and 2 second-round picks. The first-round draft pick for the Islanders is in 2018, the second-round pick in 2019 or 2020. So it looks like it's just picks, and it's not a rostered player that necessarily went the other way for the New York Islanders.
Well, the defenseman from the Islanders had talked about wanting to go out west. There's some family issues there, and it finally happened to be closer to the family, to be closer to home. So it's a big move for the Calgary Flames, who have a good defenseman. This is a great defenseman, but I expect there's going to be you know, some significant movement here as we move further towards the July 1st free agency market that's out there. There's a lot of teams that are looking for salary cap relief. There's teams that need to pick up salary. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, Chicago's been a major player up to this point, you know, the team is going to have a different look next year. There's no question about that. And you have to understand that it's part of the game and there's progress, and you move on and move further down the road each and every year. You've lost some pieces of the puzzle that you didn't want to lose. You've made some decisions here to move some pieces of the puzzle rather than lose them. So, I mean, if you look what's going on here, I think there's going to be a lot of excitement here in the next little while. Vegas is certainly not done dealing with all of their players that they have. They picked up in the expansion draft. They've got to get rid of them. They picked up 13 defensemen. So you have about 7 or 8 on your roster, basically, within the organization.
Right.
But these guys are all NHL defensemen.
Yes.
So you got to move those players. And I know a lot of teams are going to be looking at picking up some of those players. So there's going to be a lot of movement. And I think that, you know, in some ways, when you see teams making moves, you counter... you counteract those moves with something of your own if you feel that a team has really improved within your division, within your conference.
Let's touch on a few teams in particular. Late last night, we saw St. Louis make a move. They pick up Braden Schenn.
You know what? He kind of fits the mold of the St. Louis Blues. He's a big, strong, kind of powerful type of player. The Blues, though, do lose a guy in Ryan Reeves that goes to the Pittsburgh Penguins a little bit later, and him, he's always been a thorn in the side of the Blackhawks, a big physical player. So, you know, you look at changing the dynamics of some of these teams. You look at how successful Pittsburgh was, the way that they were built, the way that they were structured, you know, how well Nashville did. You always kind of want to model your franchise, your team around some of the teams that have been successful for a long time. It was the big, heavy teams that were there. You know, last year you saw what Nashville did, or this year you saw what Nashville did with speed. Pittsburgh's about speed and tenacity as well. So, you know, you're going to make some adjustments to your rosters, and I think it's an exciting time. And always in the off season, even the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, make some moves, and they want to continue to get better. If you're not getting better, you're not going anywhere, because everybody else is trying to improve their team. So, you know, Blackhawks felt that they had to make some significant moves here. There's underlying reasons in some of them, with the salary cap and the cost certainty that they'll have moving forward to kind of operate under the normal circumstances, rather than being, you know, kind of encompassed by the salary cap structure and losing a lot of key players every year because you can't afford to keep them there. They want to try and alleviate that. And they're working towards some cost certainty.
You also touched on the expansion draft, and it took a chunk out of a couple of teams, and one of them in the Blackhawks division, and that's the Minnesota Wild. They lose Eric Halla. They also had to lose a first-round pick and a prospect in order to keep them away from a couple of their guys on defense.
There was a lot of interesting dealings, and I don't think ever in the history of an expansion team did they have the power of what Vegas did this year, the new rules. But obviously, you know, you look at the expansion price that Vegas is paying to get into the National Hockey League, and you know, each franchise knows that when that comes in, you're going to lose a piece of the puzzle. And there was a lot of side deals made, and a lot of those side deals have not come out as of yet. To not pick a guy like Scandella or Matt Dumba from Minnesota, two guys that were highly sought off on the defensive side of it, you don't know the price that, you know, these teams paid or will have paid to keep those guys, you know, from taking significant pieces of the puzzle. Still rumors that Minnesota is going to make a deal with one of those players, but that's on their terms now.
That's true. And even a team like Nashville, James Neal, a sniper, a big body, gone.
David Poile is a very respected general manager in Nashville, and he just said the asking price to protect James Neal was just something that he wasn't willing to do. And George McPhee knows that he is in a position of authority, of power, and strength. So he was, you know, making sure that he was getting the most, and that's his job, to get the most out of every pick. And if they weren't going to give something that, you know, prospects, assets, or other players to not take James Neal, you know, he's going to be a big piece of that puzzle in Vegas. He's a legitimate goal scorer and a name that they can kind of bank on.
Great stuff. So much fun talking hockey in the middle of the summer, isn't it?
It is.
I enjoy it. Judd, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Great That's show great. Today. I want to thank our production staff who did a terrific job. Bill Malone, our engineer. Joey Gelman, our producer, along with Danny Long back at WGN. Thank you so much. I'm Judd Surratt saying so long. We're going to see it just in a couple of weeks at the Blackhawks convention. But that'll wrap up the Blackhawks draft show from the floor of the United Center. We look forward to seeing you at the Blackhawks convention. And, of course, once training camp begins in the middle of September and the exhibition season starts, we'll be back on the air on a regular basis. For all of us here with the broadcast today, we want to say thank you for taking the time to listen today. All the best to you guys. Enjoy the summer and keep focused. A lot of still is going to happen here during the summer. Between now, free agency is going to hit here on July 1st for the Blackhawks. So a lot of hockey to talk about. But have a great summer, and we'll talk to you in a little bit.